So the title of the talk this evening, there'll be a talk and then we're going to do some exercises together, so a short talk. And the title is Compassion is Natural. And I think you all experience now, we're in the middle of the retreat, and stuff comes up. In fact, it often is quite a shock. Here I am, minding my own business, not harming anybody, just quiet, and the body starts to hurt, and the mind starts to go crazy, and all kind, and I begin to get exhausted, and there's stress, and boredom, and I have to say all these phrases all the time, like a monkey, a tukki. And why? Why are these things coming up? And I think that the answer is quite clear and classical, that because we do nothing, they come up. In other words, the fact that we are giving space to our mind-body process and giving attention allows and permits stuff to arise that normally we shut down and normally we're not ready to listen. We're busy, we're running, we're doing, and we're not ready for the messages. Basically, they're messages of samsara. They're messages of conditioning. They're the messages that mean the first noble truth, dukkha, dissatisfaction, the fact that we are shaped into an adult form with all the pressure and conditioning that we've received in our life, and that's built into us. And as soon as we give it space, it comes up. It's like we're quiet, it's like a pool of water that's quiet, and we can begin to see the mud underneath. So these things come up when we give them space. And many of you are experiencing them right now. And what has been happening then to the metta, to the loving kindness practice, is that loving kindness, the heart, it's like water. It just goes where it's needed. So the heart is just going to these places in us. And maybe our phrases change from may I be happy to may I be free from pain and suffering. And maybe it just happens to us. And so what has happened actually is that because we experience difficulty and suffering comes up from deeper inside, so the metta changes to compassion without us really noticing that that's what's happening. But it is what's happening. So as soon as loving kindness meets suffering, it becomes compassion. As soon as we make friends with suffering of ourselves or others, we are in the territory of compassion. Metta is basically a movement, a heart movement, based on intimacy, based on connection. And it is a practice where we practice becoming connected. We actually practice empathy. We develop empathy to ourselves and to others. Basically, when we are practicing metta, we are moving towards the feeling of what it's like to be the other. We are moving towards the sense of being, what it's like to be in the shoes of another. And that's the basis of metta and the basis of compassion. And it's a powerful and liberating movement, because the whole sense that we are withdrawn, we are kind of closed into me, is actually an illusion. It's actually not real. It's basically just a habit of mind that we feel contracted into me and struggling with my problems, my issue, my life, my relationships, my partner that I don't get on with, my children that I argue with, my boss that doesn't like me, all of that. Me. But it's not real. Because fundamentally and basically, we are like each other. And so in a way, the movement of metta and compassion is restoring truth, is bringing us back to a truth. Everyone in this room wants to be happy. And not only all human beings, the ants, the moths, the birds outside, also want to be happy. Everyone in this room wants to be and not to die, not to not be. Same with the animals. We're all the same. And that's the basis of metta. And by the way, it's also the basis of ethics, of morality, basisha etika. I want to quote the Dhammapada. This is a classic ancient text of small sentences which are kind of encapsulate the Buddhist teaching. So one of the verses says, having empathy for others, one sees that all beings love life and fear death. Knowing this, one does not harm or cause any harm. So empathy is part of our life, but often we lose it by the sense of being wrapped, closed in me and mine and my struggles. But it's right there. Children know it. I'll tell a small story. One of my grandchildren, like 2 years ago, and she was only about three, and she was running in front of our house, and she ran past a small black spot on a stone. And she stopped next to this little spot. It was just this big. Could hardly see it. She stopped, and she looked at it, and I looked at it, and it was a piece of a wing of a beetle. The cherek shel kanaf shel charak. Tiny, mamash katan. She looked at it, and she said, definitely, it was looking for its mother. So touching to to see that movement in us, we are the same. We are all the same. So we feel the pain of others, and we feel our pain, because we're the same. And that's the basis of ethics and the basis of our goodness. Everybody will help a blind man cross the street. Everybody will help a blind man cross the street because of empathy, because we feel, without thinking, what it's like to be in the shoes of the man, blind man, trying to cross the street. So automatically we would help. It comes from our understanding of the pain of others. And we share samsara. We share being in a body. And it's not easy. And a bit scary. So we share the vulnerability, a pagiyut. The Buddha said, life in all worlds. I don't know why he said all worlds. I think he must have really meant the stars and the gods and the insects and every world. Life in all worlds is unstable. Life in all worlds has no protection. Life in all worlds has to be left. We have to leave life in the end. That's scary. And yet, it's truth that affects all living beings. And so, we are joined by that truth of samsara. And from there comes compassion. Compassion in the language of the Pali language is translated as the heart that vibrates when faced with suffering. The vibration of our heart when we meet suffering. And I think that I like the in Hebrew, the word from the Tanakh, rachamim, because it does have that quality. The ancient word rachamim, it comes from the word rechem. It has that quality of traditional compassion, of holding others, of being together in rechem, the womb. And for us, compassion is more important than we think. Because our mindfulness, our meditation practice, may not always work. We may not have enough of it. We may be in real difficulty in our daily life. Or we may be faced with the real difficulty of others. And we just don't know what to do. Maybe, you know, we've all experienced it. We practice mindfulness, meditation, awareness practice. Then we find ourselves really sick. And it seems like all the awareness goes. We just lie there and suffer. And nothing to do. Or many of us find limits to our practice. We may get involved in conflict with others. And we just get swept by conflict. And it seems too strong and overwhelming. And all the retreats we did and all the meditations we had seem to disappear out the window. In times like that, compassion is the default. At those places, at those times, compassion is our real friend. Because when things get too much, when suffering arises which is just more than we can handle, compassion is always there. When we're faced with someone else's suffering, compassion is the default. Berat mechdal. When we're sitting next to the bedside of someone that is dying, when we go to hospital and visit someone very sick, when we ourselves may be sick or struggling, compassion is the default. So how do we practice compassion? I think the first thing that really helps, more or less essential, is to expose and to reveal our own vulnerability, pegiut, not to cover it over, but to allow it to be there as truth. First noble truth is there. When we live with our vulnerability, we are living deeply. We are almost like we're living on the edge of the razor, the razor's edge. Life is unstable, but we're right on that edge. But that's much more powerful place to live than covering over, pretending that everything's all right. Kolbe seder. Of course, kolbe seder in a way, in the deepest place, sure. Everything's absolutely fine the way it is. But things are not beseder. We suffer. So meeting our vulnerability, allowing it to be there, not as a threat, but as a form of truth, reality, living close to our life as it really is a source of compassion, is a power that brings compassion. And with it, we need to kind of meet the blocks to compassion and the blocks, the machsomim, that cover over and kind of keep peeling, makalef, to peel away the covers. And in a way, this is what we're doing on the retreat here. We are, in a way, peeling the covers that we put through daily life to try and ki'ilu pretend that life is beseder, that everything is beseder. So we are actually uncovering. And it's a process of also removing blocks, meeting our fears, rather than just being controlled by our fears. Meeting our existential loneliness, our existential insecurity. We don't want, compassion is not about being nice. Compassion is not niceness. I know everyone likes a smile, and that's great, and we should smile. But when smile is instead of meeting the truth, then it doesn't help us. It's just a mask, masecha, and we don't need it. So, better to kind of open our vulnerability, and from there, from a deeper place of truth, the compassion begins to flow, and we can feel deeply the other because we feel deeply ourselves. There are all kinds of blocks and issues with compassion that I don't want to go into it too deeply right now. One of them, for example, is the mixture between compassion and pity in English, or rachamim in the modern Hebrew, I think, tends to be more like pity in English. And it tends to be a place where I'm okay, aniba seda, and I'm looking down on somebody else who is not. And so from this superior place, rachamim in modern Hebrew, or pity in English. So that's a block to real compassion. As I say, trying to be nice is also a block to compassion. When we give, I don't give my grandchildren endless mamtakim sweets. I just don't. And they know that I'm not the address. If the mamtakim, they go somewhere else. But that's fine. They're totally happy with that. Because they know that's... So I think I'm being compassionate. Someone else will come to me and say, you're not a good saba. You're not giving your children. You should give them bamba and sweets and mamtakim. You know, but this is what sabas do. Not me. But you could say it would be a wrong kind of compassion, in my view, to give lots of mamtakim to poor, innocent kids. Another place, and a very important place where we develop compassion, is really in the simple act of mindfulness. Compassion, like everything, needs the seeing eye. Seeing eye. The eye that sees. Just like yesterday I described metta as looking with kind eyes. And compassion also needs looking. You have to notice the pain of another. You have to notice what's going on around you. And it's such a powerful shift. Imagine someone's coming to you and begins to argue with you. Why you do this? You keep doing this. You're not right. You're not beseda. You do this and I'm fed up with you. And your first reaction is, what? Defense. Haganah. And maybe anger. I'm right. What are you telling me? Why are you saying that? Just stop attacking me. But if you really look, you might begin to see the pain and the stress behind the eyes of the person who's attacking you. And when you do that, and you see maybe their pain, maybe their fear, maybe their difficult life, maybe they didn't have breakfast in the morning, I don't know why they're so atzbanut with you, million reasons, but as soon as there's a seeing, everything changes. Then there's no reason anymore for you to react with haganah to you, defensiveness, aggressiveness, protection. Instead of that, your heart goes to the other person and say, okay, I understand you. I realize you're upset. I can see that you're angry. I understand you. Let's try and work this one out. We've come from another place completely. But that is the seeing. To see behind the situation, see the other person, see yourself, see the insect on the grass, see the birds in the sky, see the pain of samsara manifest in all beings. So it's very much about seeing, and seeing is always in the now. So the more that we're right in the now, right in the now, miyadiyut, the immediacy of experience, that's an invitation to compassion. It's not abstract seeing. It's not thinking about. It's being right in the now, seeing what's going on at this moment, between you and another person, or between you and yourself, or between all the whole world around you. And part of that seeing, and here's where it gets a little bit subtle, a bit adin, part of that seeing is seeing your own emptiness. Because when we really look in the moment at ourselves or at the world, it dissolves the tendency to believe in me as a boss of things, a controller, a center, a separate person. It begins to dissolve. And we can feel something more deep, more true, which is an empty space from which our awareness is shining, from which our life is operating, from which our awareness comes out, our freedom. And it's that empty space that allows us to be endlessly compassionate. When, for example, doctors or nurses or teachers who start with a lot of compassion and they become their compassion gets exhausted, it's mostly because they've got contracted by pressure into themselves. I've got to do this, another 100 patients today, another 50 complaining, difficult people to deal with, another 100 kids in the classrooms that are shouting, another day of that and of that, and another day and another day. And who doesn't get exhausted? The compassion, the heart is squeezed. The heart is squeezed because of struggle. If we allow more space, compassion arises. If we feel more space inside us, compassion arises. And the basis of space, freedom, inner space, is not to be full of ourselves. That's inner space. And when we are not so full of ourselves, we can receive the world. And then the compassion becomes endless. The Buddha, pictures of the Buddha with big ears, it's because of his emptiness. And the big ears are listening to the cry or the pain of all beings in samsara. So it's the emptiness that allows us to receive the pain of others and not be destroyed, and it's the source of compassion, of endless compassion. So I want to just read a little piece from Etty Hillesum, that many of you know the book. And it's just, so even if you've read it before and you love it like I do, it's just a small piece that just shows this in beautiful language of Etty Hillesum's diary. She was writing it in the Second World War, basically with the Gestapo outside the door, in Holland in the Second World War. She writes, "I went to bed early last night, and from my bed I stared out through the large open window. And it was once more as if life, with all its mysteries, was close to me, as if I could touch it. I had the feeling that I was resting against the naked breast of life, and could feel her gentle and regular heartbeat. I felt safe and protected. And I thought, how strange, it's wartime. There are concentration camps. I can say of so many of the houses I pass, here the son has been thrown into prison, there the father has been taken hostage, and there an 18-year-old boy has been sentenced to death. And these streets and houses are all so close to my own. I know how very nervous people are. I know about the mounting human suffering. I know the persecution and oppression and despotism and the impotent fury and the terrible sadism. I know it all. And yet, at unguarded moments, when left to myself, I suddenly lie against the naked breast of life, and her arms round me are so gentle and so protective, and my own heartbeat is difficult to describe, so slow and so regular and so soft, almost muffled, but so constant as if it would never stop. Okay, so we can close the...